Hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
I am very excited to be speaking with you. I am such an admirer of your work. I loved what you did with Raised by Wolves,
Thank you.
and what you did with The Marksman. And now to see what you and what you've done on Silo is just stunning
Thank you.
with
That's very kind.
Nuance. And I have to say, I think you and Morton are a dynamic duo, with him as a director on what, five of the episodes that you directed, and Adam Bernstein directing one. I have always
Yeah,
looked.
it's actually 3 and 3.
Three and three, okay.
Yeah, so I did. I bookended the show.
As well you
So.
should. You set this up beautifully. You set the tone in those opening episodes, and then you lead us into season two with the final couple of episodes. Just stunning from a tonal standpoint. How early did you get involved in Silo, and what was your approach to bringing Silo to life? Because the lighting and the lensing differentiate between the different, whether it's the down low, whether it's up high, whether it's in the middle, it is appropriate for the class systems that we see. So I'm curious about your process.
I got on quite early, pretty much a year before we finished. So I was almost doing 2.5 to 3 months prep with the production designer.
Oh. I have to tell you, Mark, that I love this series so much. I binged all 10 episodes at one time. I have since re-binged two more times. That's how engaged I am in this series. And so much is due to your work and Gavin's work.
No
Right.
To be any form of light. So we came up with the concept that it was all reflected light off this mirror system.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this mad system played out in Europe, in Austria, where villages in the high Alps in the winter weren't getting lit. And they were suffering from depression on the east side of the valley. And the cantons in Switzerland and Austria came up with these ideas of heliotropes, which would throw light across the valley like a giant reflecting mirror. And that was the kind of seed for the concept of how we could get light, you know, down a mile down deep into the silo.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, it was taken from, you know, real world concept in terms of reflected light. And then once we discussed that with the VFX department and Gavin, we then built, and I think it does reveal itself a couple of times, I can't remember throughout the show, but, you know, when the lights are switched on, they gather whatever the generator is giving, and then it bounces the light and throws it all the way down into the bottom of this structure. However, at the top, it's getting the cleaner light, but by the time you get to the bottom, it's very, very weak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, you can get more tone into the levels through fixtures and fittings.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that was kind of a loose wheelhouse on where to play.
That's amazing. That just amazes me. But because it's stunning, we have many instances where the camera is looking directly down the center of the silo, and you see light on each level, and it gets smaller and dimmer the further down you go, just like if you're looking into a canyon. And I love how it would just be a rectangular block of light every so many feet around the circle. And it was built in. It was inherent to the structure, almost like a beating heart, a vein coming off of the machine.
All of the lights are designed. So the whole, you know, working with, you know, the set dresser and Gavin, the production designer, we designed every single light.
Oh my
God. Nothing was booked. So, and then obviously that all had to be practically illuminated within the electrical department. So in itself, that's the challenge.
Oh my God. Mark, what an undertaking.
Yeah, and the floor, the main floor was just two levels. So whenever you see them going down the stairs, it was two levels.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a CG takeover, whether you look up or down. And then months would pass on how to then change those two levels the deeper down we go.
Mm-hmm.
So for production, it was quite a challenge in terms of repainting those levels. But we overtook an old KFC cold store in Essex. And we repurposed it so that we could house the giant staircase.
Wow.
The set itself was quite big. And that was pre-designed into one of these, you know, cold warehouses, because we couldn't get into any stage space.
We
were just coming out of the pandemic and everything went mad. So we had to overtake, you know, these old warehouses, which have now been refurbed into the studio space.
Wow. Going through the levels, one of my favorite levels is the down deep in the generator room. That is the beating heart of the silo. And I love what you've done with with the camera work down there, with the lensing, with the framing, you give us this great overview. And then with certain things, you move the camera in. We can see, you know, the channel locks. We can see the equipment that they're using. But everything down there has that great red orange glow, that rusty glow to it. And it's so textured that you can really feel the energy and the heat in that level versus the cold, unfeeling nature of somebody like Tim Robbins' character, you know, who's up at the top as Holland. So talk to me about creating, starting at the the generator room, because I am in love with Gavin's work and then your lensing of that room.
Again, so we, you know, Gavin worked really amazingly with his engineering team and the special effects team to actually create a moving piece of mechanics. We thought that, like you underlined, would be the heartbeat of the silo itself. And within that, we find our lead protagonist. And so I think the aesthetic behind that was to really make it feel mechanical, you know, feel industrial, feel as if this was the very last piece of industry that could sustain this society going forward for almost 300 years. And that in itself lent to textures and colour that we then painted onto the walls. And then the lights, you know, I decided, well, what happens if we painted it with bitumen and oil products? You know, and that gave that kind of eerie yellowish tone.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get in mechanical, I wanted it to bake it in to the negative. So I put so much on that they found that when it came to the grave, they couldn't really get rid of it. So it was there almost in the ones and zeros, you know, that we were capturing. So that was very exciting to kind of formulate, because obviously at that point you're so low, you're at ground zero in the silo, that there's very little illuminated or reflected light that gets down there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's coming from the heart of the silo at that point, or from the lighting structures. Contrasting, as you rightly put it, as you get into the more technocratic part of the levels, they are then feeling, you know, the hidden tech or the, you know, from these giant computer screens. And that I felt was a lot, should be more blue tonally. It's a lot cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And that aid to the fact that there was this outfit that really, you know, hiding their tech and what's really driving the reveal towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And working with Gavin on those two thoughts, we could then really dial that into, you know, the colours and tones of the silo.
Now, you also, when you get up high, with the tech and whatnot, and you have that the big surveillance room that gets disclosed to us, I also see you bringing in some negative space at that point, which feeds into the whole idea of cloak and dagger and hiding things. And I really love just enough. There was never anything overpowering about it, but just enough.
Out too much. I just wanted it to really feel embedded.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think we kind of got there. You know, it wasn't too. I didn't want it to be the thing that was talked about too much, because I thought that the writing was strong enough.
Yeah.
You know, to cast all of the characters. So it was almost just how do we envelop. The script and let the character come out of those levels.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm hoping that we kind of got there.
I think you definitely did. And what I also find interesting is when we get into the different rooms, like we get into the sheriff's office, or we go into the mayor's room, which is warm and has like a mid-century 1950s feel to the decor and the wood. And contrasting that when we get into Harriet's chamber that is just filled to the brim with tools and toys and electronics and cast-offs. Yeah. What was your approach with the lensing? Because I definitely felt like with Harriet, you really were getting an overview, but then slowly you take us around with the camera. The camera moves so we get a full look. Same thing with the mayor's office. The camera goes around. You have a lot of camera movement in the visual grammar here.
Yeah, just to, so that we can shake it up a bit, you know, because we never go out. It's terrifying never to photograph the outside apart from that one moment at the end of 10 hours.
Yep.
You know, the viewer is really confined. So, you know, cinematically, how do you engage with the characters and move around these rooms? So, you know, we're very lucky enough to get a set of these new anamorphics that instead of historically squeezing what we all know and love about the two-time squeeze on an anamorphic, these ones set out for really for the full-frame cameras, and that gave you a bit more headroom, but you can you still got the anamorphic quality. And so the Morton was very adamant that those rooms, you know, were characters themselves. So like the big cafe sets, or like you rightly put, the sheriff's set, you know, they all had to contain the energies that the script was allowed to be in it. And I think that the camera movement was designed literally to allow the actors to move around wherever they want. So if it was an ensemble, that the idea was the 360 sets that they were allowed to, you know, to inhabit and not be in any way confined by the lighting design. So in a way, yes, we, you know, you'd have to on the floor, light on the floor, but really the lighting came with the design of the silo.
And of course, is it my imagination or were you moving the camera circularly in curved movements? There are very few like straight dolly tracks. I think I got the feeling everything, the camera is moving circularly as well.
In some respects, but I also think it's the very nature, you know, I've never filmed in a constant circle because it's a silo, so there's no square wall. It was very disorientating at first because you always feel that you're twisting on this helix, you know, and that comes out from the opening credits, which I think give a very good overview of what that structure is. You know, I think there's a very clever use of, you know, an opening sequence because then you can see the scale of what society's having to cope with. And that lent itself, or took itself, from our constantly moving camera. I'm glad that you said that because we did a couple of circular moves, but really, I think by moving in long, slow moves that and rotating around, that gave that effect.
I love it. I think it's fabulous. Now, the one big pop of color that we get in this silo is the farm floor, the cornfields. And talk to me about creating that, because I got the feeling that we had like fluorescent lights lighting in there, but I'm not sure, because that's the one huge pop of color that we get that stands out in some of the look down shots from upper floor to lower. And it was standout.
Yeah, so those, you know, are you talking about about the big wide shots when we go through the floors and then you see
the farm. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, I mean, we designed again with Gavin and with Daniel Ratfire, the VFX supervisor, you know, what we thought that should be, and going back to what farming would be, you know, it's hydroponics, but so there would be, you know, this artificial life that would help all the corn grow. And then when we got to the sequences where she's chased, you know, through the cornfields, or when she's had flashbacks with her mother, then I could really kind of change up the color. You know, we could go to somewhere different and do something a little more radical.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exciting, because after a year of photographing, you know, these various levels of society, it almost felt like I wanted to feel like we are outside, but we're still within the confine of the silo.
Mm-hmm. How exciting was it when you finally got to film something that is "quote unquote" outside?
We do you know what? It was the first day of filming. We had one day, and our first day of filming was outside, and it was on a cucumber farm, which we just filmed all the people who managed to go out through the door, and then everything else was built by the VFX teams. So all of that big aerial work, obviously we got our artists walking over the berm of the hill, but the reveal at the end is the magic of Daniel, I have to say.
No daylight for you filming this. My God, Mark, you worked wonders, wonders.
Yeah, there was no, yeah, I wasn't a pretty sight after a year.
Now, what led you to go with the Anamorphics? You were shooting on what, the Alexa Mini?
We were on a Mini LX, so we're using the large format Alexas. And they kind of, I took the show over, there was a DVD that got moved on, and then I thought, well, look, I tested them before, and I was thinking, do we need Anamorphic? And I'm glad that, you know, we went through the run of tests, because I think you can feel the effect of them.
Yes.
And I think because these Caldwell lenses gave you a bit more top and bottom,
mm-hmm.
and that allowed, in the image, that allowed us to pursue that route. I think if we'd gone with the more classic, you know, PV two-time squeezes, that might not have worked so much. We would have limited ourselves on the vertical axis.
You know, what size? What were the primary size lenses you were using? Because I really don't see too many like macro close-ups or ECUs or anything.
No, that was we gave ourselves a limitation, and we only used five lenses. Literally five lenses for the whole show. From 20 through to 100. And that was it. So if you went in for a close-up, we just moved in. Yeah, it was a really good shorthand to attain, so that everything then became, you know, unique. So then the other DPs who did the middle blocks would have to take on that dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I love the look that you give us with using the Anamorphics and limiting the lenses like that. I think that's a brilliant confine.
Yeah, so that was a really good, you know, exercise in you know, how do we keep that tonal and focal length all locked in so that everything has a uniformity.
Did you run into any problems or challenges with color and texture, like in the midsection of the silo, which is where so much activity takes place, because it's pretty much gray concrete is what we're seeing, and yet I'm seeing texture within that. That so I'm curious, what kind of challenge that presented you with?
Again, you know, Gavin's amazing in the set. You know, it's funny how we only had, obviously the rooms off that central staircase were set, but we from that we only had two or three corridors, which we were constantly changing, adding texture, adding shine, the use of, you know, water, the use of atmospherics, all kind of, you know, the change of light or fixtures of light, so that it was a constant evolution over the year, so that we all, you know, you'd walk into the production design womb, as it were, and there, you know, there was Gavin and I's idea of, you know, what the mid should be, where all was spaced out on the walls and concept art. And then that, you know, gradually you could see this whole society evolve vertically throughout the art department. It was really wonderful.
Now, were you working with shot lists or storyboards or a combination of both?
I think Morton's a bit more fluid. So we'd rehearse and then find out where we'd go. The bigger set plays, so the moves down to Mechanical were storyboarded, or Rebecca's descent, you know, down the rope work into the bottom of the silo, into the very middle of it, those were all storyboarded. But once we found a rhythm with Morton and with Adam, you know, the sets really allowed us to block those sequences. So they weren't so much, sure. I'd shot this a little with Adam, but with Morton it was a little freer. You know, he let me play a bit.
Ooh, letting you play, Mark, that could be dangerous. Are you coming back for season two?
No, unfortunately, I got offered another project, and I couldn't excuse myself from it. So, unfortunately, I had to hand on the baton to my fellow cinematographers.
Oh my goodness!
It'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Well, you've laid the groundwork beautifully with the visual tonal bandwidth for the series. But now that we have Juliet outside, this undoubtedly is going to change the visual tone depending on where they take her in the story. I know where it goes in the books because we haven't even finished covering all of Wool, the first book. But so there's a lot of opportunity there for a totally different visual tone.
I'm not sure where they'll go with that. I know that I haven't read all the books, and I think she gets to another silo.
I'm not telling. I'm going to keep you in suspense.
Oh, so you know.
I know. I've read all the books and the graphic novel.
Oh, wow. Let me ask you a question. Were you surprised by the world that we created? Was it near to your... your thought process in your head when you were reading the books and the novel?
I actually prefer what you did visually over what was in my head for the books, but with one of the biggest changes being the fact that in the book, it's a winding metal staircase. And when I think winding metal staircase, I think about, you know, just the step with no riser, so I could see people like sliding through, breaking ankles, things like that. Plus, I thought of like the sound factor of shoes clopping on metal. I love the concrete. I love the texture it gives and that depth of field that you get as you go the lateral, because of the way the step, you know, it has to flare out more going around the core. And it adds so much more visual interest. So I really love, that was a huge, huge change. And the fact that the character of Harriet is a guy in the book and just very briefly in there, not a big part. So with this, it was changed to a female, the character of Martha, and really beefed up. I mean, the character, you know, you get Harriet Walker in there as Martha. And Harriet, she's just brilliant.
She was amazing. Yeah, amazing.
But to bring her in and beef up that character and really give a maternal kind of role, she plays a much bigger part. Those are the two biggest things for me.
Yeah.
But the overall visual, because that staircase, the spiral staircase, is central to everything.
Yeah.
I love the switch to the solid concrete versus metal.
Yeah, I think you know, that was it. You know, and how do we get that connective architecture that leads to, you know, all of these other interesting, diverse areas of the silo? You know, it's quite a rich world-building exercise.
And, of course, with the concrete, it also gives you the metaphoric sense of solid footing. You know, you're on solid footing in this mile high or mile deep, however you want to look at it, silo. You know, I want something solid supporting me and supporting this world versus, you know, flimsy metal staircases.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The whole religious exercise of being, you know, exercised out of the silo once you commit the cardinal world, you know, sin of these words, I want to go out.
Yeah.
It felt that room that leads through to the door, that then leads up the runway to the outside, should be almost ecclesiastical. So that's the only, it's a very, one of the few moments you might see some wood and text.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more organic texture.
Yes.
In the silo.
Yeah.
You know, every room was, even though it seems to have a unity, there is a difference, and I think that was the challenge.
Oh.
How do we give the viewer the chance to explore different environments within this one vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's just so fabulously done, Mark. So fabulously done.
Thank you.
I mean, I was enthralled.
It's very difficult. It was a big challenge, but I think we achieved it, you know. And cinematically, I think it holds. I think it holds.
Absolutely. And overall, watching 10 hours all at one time.
Wow.
I took no break. Okay, I admit, I went to the bathroom once. But I was so engaged and so enthralled. It was like watching a feature film. It's very cinematic. It's visually exciting. Yeah. The characters, the performances, Rebecca Ferguson is amazing.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins just scared the bejeebus out of me the minute he appeared on screen.
Yeah, it's a very good cast. Very, very good.
Excellent.
Cast.
But for something like this, you really need this world. We have to believe the world. And I believed it from the opening frame, Mark.
No, thank you. That's good to hear. I'm glad that we got it out there. And it seems to have done okay. I've been in it for so long. I'd lost all sense of it. And it took a good, like, 4 to 5 months to decompress from it.
I'm sure.
Really good to go and see it. We got a chance to go see it in a cinema on the launch event.
Uh huh.
So that was very, you know, I was very honored to witness that.
But from the very beginning, and we have our medieval festival for Freedom Day. It's just from beginning to end. It's an amazing job, Mark. You set the tone. You set the tone at the beginning. You set the tone at the end for moving on to the next chapter of Juliet's world. And I'm sorry you're not going to be part of season 2, but I can't wait to see what you do next, because I'll be watching it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mark, thank you so much. This has been an absolute thrill getting to speak with you about this work.
Thank you.